Sorelle e fratelli.
Sisters and brothers, this is the Jubilee. This is the season of hope in which we are invited to rediscover the joy of meeting the Lord.
It's the year of Jubilee. From ancient roots to new traditions, we share what you need to know about this exciting year and how you can take part. Offering hope to all, Pope Francis opens a holy door for inmates. We bring you to one of Italy's largest prisons for a historic Jubilee first.
We're really looking forward to meeting, other pilgrims and other people that will be in Rome.
Pilgrims of Hope. Millions of travelers are expected to visit Rome this year, meet some of the Catholics making the Jubilee pilgrimage to the Eternal City. And the tale of two young saints and how they're inspiring other young Catholics to live holy lives. A special edition of EWTN News in Depth starts right now.
It was really beautiful, the opening door, like how the Pope is receiving all of us.
And when I seen the doors open, it was amazing. I flew over here. I got here today just to see this, and I want to walk through the holy doors.
The world is ringing in the new year this week, but those in the Vatican got an early start on the celebration. Thousands of pilgrims gathered in Rome Christmas Eve to witness the beginning of a year-long tradition in the Catholic Church. After years of preparation, the year of Jubilee has begun. Welcome to a special edition of EWTN News in Depth. I'm Catherine Hadro. The Year of Jubilee is an event like no other, a quarter century celebration meant to inspire hope in the people of God. In this special program, we'll share everything you need to know about the Jubilee and how you can take part. The church has been holding Jubilee years for centuries, but the tradition dates all the way back to the Old Testament.
I think that folks don't realize that Jubilee years have this rich rootedness in the scriptures themselves.
The roots of the Jubilee can be traced back to the Old Testament book of Leviticus. The Lord tells Moses that every 50th year would be the year of God's favor and sacred for the Israelites. Dr. John Bergsma, professor of theology and vice president of mission at the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, explains that during this year of Jubilee, debts would be erased, servants would be freed, and ancestral property was returned to the family to which it belonged.
The whole purpose was to ensure that family identity was preserved from generation to generation, despite any economic threat. And also that the freedom of the people of Israel gained through the Exodus would never be lost.
Despite God's commandment, the Israelites failed to follow this law.
The prophets began to predict that the Messiah would come, and it would ultimately have to be the Messiah who would proclaim this Jubilee that Israel did not observe.
In his new book, Jesus and the Jubilee, Dr. Bergsma details how Jesus proclaimed the new Jubilee, whose merciful love heals us and forgives us.
And that theme of freedom from slavery continues throughout all of Scripture. Jesus is our Jubilee, and he's present in the church at all times, especially through the sacraments, to help us experience that Jubilee freedom.
The Catholic Church began to officially celebrate Jubilee years in the year 1300, when Pope Boniface VIII called a Jubilee in response to the crises the medieval church was facing, from plagues to wars and political upheaval.
And he saw the calling of this Jubilee for the first time as an important moment for the church, for Christians to come to Rome, specifically to St. Peter's, to really renew their lives in the faith, to deepen their faith.
The faithful responded to the call in great numbers, and the tradition was born. Eventually, the church decided to hold the Jubilee year every 25 years.
Apritemi le porte della giustizia.
In the 15th century, another iconic tradition began, the opening of the holy doors in Rome.
When those doors open, when people are able to walk through those holy doors, They are doing something that stands them in great tradition in the church, but also is a reminder to them very personally of a renewal of their relationship with God.
The 21st century has seen two jubilees so far. At the turn of the millennium, St. John Paul II called a jubilee year for the 2,000-year anniversary of Christ's birth. He used the jubilee to promote reconciliation and forgiveness, and in a gesture of outreach, made a series of apologies for the wrongdoings of Christians in previous centuries. Pope Francis then called an extraordinary jubilee in 2016, outside of the typical 25-year cycle. He dedicated the year to God's mercy and encouraged Catholics to return to the sacrament of confession.
This extraordinary holy year is a gift of grace. Going through that door means to discover the profundity of the mercy of our Father, who welcomes each one of us personally. He is the one who looks for us.
This year's Jubilee is centered around the theme, Pilgrims of Hope. Within 2025, the Vatican will hold dozens of jubilees dedicated to specific groups and people.
We have, for example, a jubilee of marching bands. We have a jubilee for entrepreneurs. We also have a jubilee for families. And then there's going to be jubilees for those who are handicapped or those who are struggling with disabilities. Those are reminders that everyone can participate in a jubilee year. And there's something to be derived from that participation in a jubilee year.
Dr. Matthew Bunsen, editorial director for EWTN News, says the Holy Father wants to give hope to a world in desperate need of it.
We're in the midst of wars, of conflicts, of a breakdown in the most basic forms of dialogue among cultures, among people, among religions, among everyone engaged now in culture. And hope is something that I think he wants to impart to the whole of the church and to the whole of the world.
The opening of the Holy Doors begins the Jubilee every 25 years. For the first time, the Holy Father opened a Holy Door in a prison as a tangible sign of hope for those incarcerated around the world. EWTN Vatican correspondent Magdalena Walinska-Reddy brings us to Rome.
As popes have for centuries, Pope Francis inaugurated the Jubilee year by opening the Holy Doors in Rome's basilicas. But this year, he opened a special holy door for the first time in history in a Roman prison. In this extraordinary gesture, the Holy Father is bringing the Jubilee message of conversion and hope directly to those on society's margins.
Opening a holy door here in Rebibbia means opening a holy door in all the prisons of the world. Let us remember that this is not just for Italy. The Jubilee is on an international level, and so this celebration, this opening, becomes an effort to open a door and bring hope to millions of inmates.
Since the very beginning of his pontificate, Pope Francis has focused on the weakest and the marginalized. The opening of a holy door in a prison is a powerful sign of closeness and compassion for those struggling to find hope.
Upon learning of Pope Francis's upcoming visit to open the holy door, the prisoner responded with spontaneous enthusiasm, eager to create a special gift for him. In our metamorphosis workshop, which repurposes wood from migrant boats into various objects, they began crafting their offering. They couldn't wait the moment of giving the Pope their special gift.
The Holy Door at Rebibbia Prison now stands as a beacon of hope for inmates worldwide, showing that even within confinement, a path toward renewal and grace is possible. Just 2 days earlier, on Christmas Eve, Pope Francis opened the Holy Door at St. Peter's Basilica, marking the official start of the Jubilee year. the Holy Father invited everyone to pass through the door and embark on a new path, one of spiritual renewal and conversion. Besides St. Peter in the Vatican, three other holy doors of Rome's major basilicas, St. Mary Major, St. John Lateran, and St. Paul outside the walls, are opened each Jubilee year.
Entro nella tua casa, Signore.
On Sunday, December 29th, the world followed the spectacular opening of the Holy Door of St. John Lateran Basilica, which celebrated the 1700th anniversary of its dedication on November 9th. This basilica is the Cathedral of Rome and the most important of the four major basilicas, called also the Archbasilica.
According to the archives, the very first holy door to be opened in Rome was probably St. John Lateran in the year 1425, followed by that of St. Peter's Basilica.
Pope Francis's beloved favorite church, located in the heart of Rome, the Papal Basilica of St. Mary Major, opened its holy door to pilgrims on the solemnity of Mary Most Holy Mother of God on January 1st. And now the world awaits the opening of the last holy door of this Jubilee, situated in the Papal Basilica of St. Paul outside the walls on Sunday, January the 5th. During this whole year, Rome expects more than 35 million pilgrims to walk through these sacred doors, seeking renewal and hope. The holy doors of three major basilicas will remain open until the 28th of December 2025, when the most important one, the St. Peter's Holy Door, will stay open until January the 6th of 2026. In Rome, Magdalena Volinskari, the EWTN News in Depth.
To discuss the Jubilee, we are joined now by a familiar face from our Vatican Bureau. Joan Lewis served as EWTN's first Vatican Bureau chief. She's lived in Rome for decades and continues to write about the latest Vatican news on her blog, jonesrome.com. This Jubilee year is her fifth one. Joan, thanks so much for joining us. We're grateful to tap into all of your knowledge. It's the start of the Jubilee year. What are you most looking forward to?
Well, for me, the biggest events are always the opening of the holy doors on the basilicas. We have one more to go, and that's in 2 days. On January 5th, the doors of St. Paul's outside the walls will be open. That's just such a wonderful story, how they open the doors, how they close the doors, what's sealed in between the facade that you see, and then the inside door when it's closed, the box containing so many wonderful items. That's very, very exciting. And then, of course, I went to the official Jubilee site, which has more information than you'll ever need in your lifetime. And I was just looking at some of the events, that what they call big moments or major moments, really. I looked at the calendar, and, of course, this month, January, we have the Jubilee of communications. There's several jubilees related to communications. February, the deacon's jubilee. And I'm excited about that because the last jubilee, I hosted a reception at my home for deacons that all of you know. You've seen them on EWTN and read their blogs, Dom Pastore, Greg Kandra, Harold Sivers, and so forth. And then March, the Missionaries of Mercy. Mm-hmm. Now, those were established in the 2016 Jubilee by Pope Francis. In April, how exciting, we have the Jubilee of Teenagers, mm-hmm. and we know that Carlo Acutis is going to be canonized at that point. Mm-hmm. May, the Jubilee of Families and Grandparents, and so forth. So a lot of big events. The Jubilee of Sports and the Holy See. Wow. And then the most quiet month, at least on their calendar, is August. Mm. But everything closes here in August, so right. We shall see.
And Joan, this is, as I mentioned, your fifth Jubilee in Rome. What are some of your favorite Jubilee memories from the past, and how does it compare to this year?
Well, because this year is so new, we've only been in it a short time. But the first ordinary Jubilee I was part of in a small way was 1975. I'd only been in Rome a year, even less than a year. And so I was learning about jubilees and was able to go to some papal events. That was Paul VI. And then 1983, the 1950th anniversary of the Year of Redemption. But the big one for me was 2000, simply because I was working at the Vatican at the time. And so I was privileged to have many, many special moments attending jubilees. And the one I still can't find my picture for, on the jubilee of the Roman Curia, because that's where I was working, I processed with a few other members of the Curia selected for the occasion right through the Holy Door. And I was one of the readers at the Papal Mass for the Roman Curia. So that stands out. Now, I just tried to go to as many events as I could that year, get as close as I could to the Holy Father, and just, we had a lot of privileges in the Curia. And then at the very end of that jubilee, the Holy Father gave those of us who worked in the Curia, especially on the jubilee, he gave us a financial bonus, economic bonus, and also a very beautiful parchment, I guess you could say, personalized, how the Holy Father thanks you, Joan Lewis, for your role in helping along with this jubilee. So many, many wonderful events. And you know what? The main thing, there was a jubilee of a new millennium. How many people are on Earth every 1,000 years for a new millennium? So that was very exciting. It was a jubilee of ecumenism. There were, and that was the year in which they started particular jubilees, like the jubilee for deacons, for youth, for artisans. So a lot of history in the year 2000.
Oh, that's incredible. Sure. That's incredible. Well, you are obviously a jubilee expert at this point. Joan, what are your top insider tips to pilgrims who are planning to make the journey to Rome this year?
Well, I think the main thing is to pack, next to your walking shoes, to pack a lot of patience, because there will be lines. You know, 30-plus million people are expected. There will be long lines. Have something to read if you're going to stand in line or have something on your phone. But anyway, pack patience, pack good shoes. Make sure to make reservations for everything. If you're coming with a group, that's probably being done for you, a diocese. But if you're coming on your own or with family or friends, make sure to make reservations at Vatican museums and even with restaurants. So I would just say those, if you come armed with the right attitude, and just turn to the Lord when you need help and say, Jesus, help me, if it's a difficult moment in a beautiful jubilee.
That's beautiful. And Joan, I'd love to get your insight on this when it comes to how Rome is right now. You really are our ears and eyes in Rome. How has the city been as it's been preparing for this jubilee for some time now? I mean, I understand there have been reports of these never-ending construction projects. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And the funny thing is, Rome and the Vatican, of course, they have known since the year 2000 that in 2025 there would be another jubilee. And instead of beginning certain huge projects on piazzas, on roadways, et cetera, you know, 8, 9, 10 years ago, some of the biggest projects only began 2 years ago. So to hurry up and get them finished was a real trial. And to have so many things ready by when they opened the Holy Door on St. Peter's Basilica, of course, on December 24th, Christmas Eve. They really had to work, but still there's a lot of things they're still working on. And even the mayor has apologized for that and said, sorry, we had to move back some of the dates. But the people will get around. You're going to manage, get to know the walking. There's a lot of new pedestrian walkways. So you'll do a lot of walking, get to know the buses, take the occasional taxi or Uber, and you know what, folks? You're going to be fine.
Well, that's a great note to leave it on. I'm excited to see how this year unfolds. Joan Lewis, as always, you are just a gem of wisdom and knowledge. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure. Happy Jubilee.
More than 30 million pilgrims will make the trek to Rome this year. We meet some of them when we return.
It was not only going to Rome, but the fact that this is a major celebration in our faith. and all that brings.
Pilgrims have their sights on Rome as they prepare for the pilgrimage of a lifetime. The journey to the Jubilee next.
My advice for people would be to prepare spiritually, to look at your prayer life, to look at the way you're practicing your faith, and take some small practical steps to do that better.
Preparation for a pilgrimage goes beyond just picking flights and packing all the essentials. The millions of Catholics planning a pilgrimage to the Vatican this year will likely bring with them a desire for spiritual growth and a hope for renewal in their faith. For centuries, pilgrimages have played a huge part in the Jubilee year. Even with the ease of modern transportation and navigation, a pilgrimage can still be challenging, but also rewarding, and yes, even life-changing. Reporter Mark Irons spoke to American Catholics preparing their own Jubilee journeys.
I am pumped. I am so excited.
We said, let's go.
In the celebration of this Jubilee year, U.S. pilgrims are journeying to Rome. Some, like the Payne Smith family, will make a meaningful return to the Eternal City.
The last time we went, it was John Paul II's 25th anniversary Mass.
Others, like Rebecca Grant Jenkins, will go for the first time. She can't wait to visit all of Rome's awe-inspiring churches.
Sitting and reflecting with God in all of those spaces. Like, I'm very excited about that.
Rebecca directs youth and young adult ministries at Our Lady Queen of Peace Catholic Church in Arlington, Virginia. In 2023, she led a group to Portugal for World Youth Day. She believes the experience of Christian pilgrimage felt then will be present as she takes another group to Rome this summer.
And it was transformative for every single one of us. It's not just about sort of making this trip to these sites, right? Pilgrimage is about change and connection with other pilgrims. Right. It's transformative.
Rebecca isn't the only one saying that.
We feel like it's going to be something that's going to be very transformative, which is something I think the Jubilee year should be.
Maria Payne and her husband Bill will travel from Baltimore to Rome with their son JP this summer. Maria and Bill first went in 1995. At that time of their life, they had been praying for a child.
It's very painful, as most people can imagine, when you really want to start a family and you really want to have a child and you pray and you go to church and you're faithful.
During their visit, they had the chance to meet Pope John Paul II.
And it was totally unexpected that we're actually going to greet the Pope. And he stopped with her because she was crying. She was very emotional. And he just kind of stopped and put his hand on her head and blessed her.
After that moment, they decided if they ever had a son, they would name him John Paul. 4 years later, their prayers were answered.
We know that there was divine intervention for that, and then to be blessed with a son.
In 2003, they returned to Rome with young JP by their side. They say this Jubilee pilgrimage will give them the chance to spiritually recharge as they continue to serve. Maria works in the NICU, and JP has found fulfillment as a Catholic high school teacher.
It's more than fulfilling. It's, you know, my life's work. It's what I'm passionate about. It's what I care about. I care very deeply about. I care every day about the kids that I see.
For now, pilgrim preparations continue before the Jubilee journey.
Making sure everybody's passports don't expire, you know, and if they do, reminding them to go get one, get a new one.
I think coming to Rome is many people's dream, but it can be very overwhelming.
Sister Maria Juan is coordinator of the U.S. Bishop's Office for American Visitors to Rome. The office helps American pilgrims get tickets to papal events, such as the Wednesday audiences or papal masses.
We provide a little practical orientation, what to bring, when to get there, how to get in line, and then weave in a little catechesis to kind of make their experience more meaningful.
Sister says this Jubilee year will be busy and a blessing.
It's really a year of grace. So to be there to walk with people as they come to see what the Lord has for them and to really reinvigorate their faith, hopefully.
The focus of the year should help those participating to reinvigorate their faith. The theme is Pilgrims of Hope.
Because it's the year of hope. And with everything going on around, we could all use a lot of that.
Anyone right now looking at the state of our world, the state of society, would say hope is something we could all hang on to.
Rebecca hopes the Jubilee will inspire Christians to share the good news of Jesus Christ with all people in 2025 and in all the years that follow.
We have to hope and believe that we, especially as Christians and Catholics, can spread the gospel with everyone.
Mark Irons, EWTN News in Depth.
If you are looking to plan a pilgrimage to the Eternal City, download the EWTN Travel Jubilee app, your virtual guide to the Jubilee. You'll find interactive maps, travel guide videos, and curated itineraries for your pilgrimage. The app is available worldwide and is completely free. This year, the Vatican is using modern means to share the Jubilee's ancient traditions with pilgrims. Luce, the cartoon mascot of the Jubilee, has already caught the attention of the digital world. The Vatican announced the mascot Luce, which means light in Italian, last October in the hopes of appealing to a younger audience and guiding visitors through the holy year. The Vatican says her simple design symbolizes the Christian journey. Her yellow raincoat is a nod to journeying through life's storms, and her muddy boots represent a long and difficult journey. Luce went viral on the internet shortly after being announced, inspiring both delight and also distaste. For those unable to travel to the Eternal City for a pilgrimage, the Vatican and tech giant Microsoft created a new way to experience St. Peter's Basilica from the comfort of your own home. Using thousands of high-resolution photos, Microsoft created a digital twin of the Basilica, allowing anyone to tour the church, journey through its history, and learn about the apostle who inspired it. This digital experience is available via web browser across the globe. You don't have to travel all the way to Rome to partake in the celebrations. Stay tuned to learn how to bring the year of Jubilee to your own home parish.
Young people in America today need community now more than ever.
Later, reaching for the heights in holiness, how two soon-to-be saints are inspiring the next generation of Catholics. Welcome back to our special preview of the Jubilee year. Whether you're visiting Rome or at home, all Catholics are invited to celebrate the Holy Year, and there are many ways to take part. Joining us in studio now is Father Paul Hartman. He's the Associate General Secretary for the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops and serves as a liaison between the U.S. bishops and the Holy See for the Jubilee year. Father, thanks so much for
being here. Oh, it's my joy to be here with you.
Oh, it's my joy. And I think especially for our viewers at home, when we think of the Jubilee year, we think of going to Rome's basilicas. We think of that imagery with the holy door, the pilgrimages. But realistically speaking, it's not feasible for all families to make this trip to Italy. So to start us off, what are some accessible ways for people to get involved in the Jubilee year?
Well, certainly the Holy Father has made it very accessible for anybody in their given circumstance to have an encounter with all the different aspects of what make a Jubilee, and more importantly, a pilgrimage within the within a Jubilee year. I always use, when I teach, the notion of the road to Emmaus. And if you remember that story, it's the disciples on a journey, which is the necessary part, that effort to go somewhere. Then there's a process of learning, listening, hearing the Lord. Mm-hmm. Then there's a sharing of a meal, sharing of time together. And then there's going forth with the experience. What the Holy Father has said is, while there's still the notion and the ideal of a journey, a pilgrimage to Rome, maybe to the Holy Land, but these are things to the effort that you are able to put forth. You make a journey and participate with your parish, with your diocese. Every bishop in the United States has the right to declare places and activities that would serve the activity of the Jubilee year. While there's not specifically a holy door, we have to remember that the door represents not only the conclusion. We arrive at the door of someone for that we've been invited to visit their home. We arrive at the door, but then you go in and something continues. And that can be just going to your parish in a particular way with an intentional commitment. So what I would recommend is everybody, even if they're homebound, reach out to your parish, reach out to your diocese and ask, can I join with people in spirit and in my circumstance in this journey? And if you are intentional about participating in the sacraments, if you are intentional about offering the Holy Father's prayers for the Jubilee year, and you are intentional about some action, then you can be you can afford yourself the great benefit of the Jubilee year, the indulgence that goes with it.
You can be a pilgrimage too, and it seems like that intentionality is the key. As I mentioned, you're the liaison between the Holy See and the U.S. bishops for this Jubilee. Can you speak about this experience so far as the liaison, and what are you hearing from our shepherds as we're entering into this Jubilee year?
I think the bishops themselves are certainly very excited. We're Americans and, you know, we're media people. Mm-hmm. When there's something vivid, it makes it all the more possible to participate, to latch on to. Mm-hmm. So the bishops really like the notion. The last great Jubilee of the year 2000, the year of mercy was considered a Jubilee year. Those are identifiable things. So the bishops are very excited about those opportunities, both if they're leading pilgrimage groups. I know many bishops are for different aspects. Remember, throughout the Jubilee year, there are jubilees for pretty much every category of people, you know, from priests to communicators, media people, through young people, married even. There's even a jubilee for those who are in prisons. And we must make an effort, obviously, because they can't make the travel. Mm-hmm. So all of those different things, different bishops are taking different opportunities to lead a group of their faithful to this. Now, that makes it all the better for them to be able to connect them. Many of the bishops who studied in Rome or have gone to Rome a number of times, to connect people, not just with that place of journey, but that place of faith of the church, and to give them their own experience, their own insight about St. Peter's, about St. Paul outside the wall, about the catacombs, all of the experiences that being in Rome can afford. But you don't actually have to go there to begin to appreciate them.
You've already hit on this, but I want to follow up on it because I think our viewers' ears might be perking up. Last year, the Vatican issued a decree that Catholics can obtain a plenary indulgence during the Jubilee year. Speak more as to how the faithful can take advantage of that, all faithful.
Sure. So I spoke of the different aspects. If you participate in what are the aspects of a Jubilee, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops for the country has declared the national shrines, specifically the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, as a sacred site and a pilgrimage site. Now, there's not a holy door per se. That's limited to the basilicas of Rome and the Holy Land and Loreto. But there is an opportunity to visit places, the various national shrines, to visit your cathedrals, and to do so with the intention of, I want to be a part of a Jubilee activity. So participate in the celebration of the Eucharist with a proper disposition, meaning you've gone to confession. Mm-hmm. Offer in your own heart and prayers the intentions of the Holy Father, and a wantingness, a desire to be joined to the rest of the world in this Jubilee celebration. Then the indulgence would redound to you.
That's a great clarification. In our remaining minute, Father, the U.S. bishops are encouraging churches to do their own stateside celebrations.
Yep.
Speak about why that local aspect is key and how it does speak to that connectedness we all need.
Well, remember, I used the example early on of the road to Emmaus, and it's one of the wonderful stories of the scriptures. There were the two disciples, and they encountered the Lord without fully recognizing. When we celebrate our faith, it can be very personal, and someone who is homebound and feels they're alone, they shouldn't feel they're alone, because even if they're homebound, they have others on the journey with them. And we go to a parish, and we belong to a greater reality than just ourselves. That's the whole point. Can we be connected to others? Mm. That can be local, that can be family, that can be diocese, that can be nation, that can be the global Catholic Church.
I think we need that connectedness more than ever.
Very much so.
Father Paul Hartman, thank you very much.
You are most welcome.
To learn more about local Jubilee events, go to usccb.org/jubilee2025. There you'll find helpful resources, including prayers, information, and calendars. During the year of Jubilee, Pope Francis will canonize two young men who've inspired youth around the world, their stories and their impact, when we return.
wow, that's a younger saint who did the things that I do and likes the things that I enjoy.
A techie teen who played video games and a practical joker with a passion for hiking. Meet the two young saints who will soon be canonized and the ordinary young people they encourage to live extraordinary lives. EWTN News in Depth will be right back.
I would like to say that next year, during the Day of Children and Adolescents, I will canonize the Blessed Carlo Acutis. And on the Day of Young People, next year, I will canonize the Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati.
A long-awaited announcement came during the Pope's general audience last November. Two young Catholics, beloved around the world for their holiness and passion for the faith, will be canonized. Jubilee years often feature canonization masses, a reminder that all people are called to holiness and to be an authentic witness of Christ. This year's two new saints are no different, and their inspiring stories are already well known across the globe. Blessed Carlo Acutis is the first millennial to be canonized in the church and possibly the first saint to be buried in a tracksuit and sneakers. Born in 1991, Acutis loved the Eucharist and used his computer coding skills to document Eucharistic miracles. He died from leukemia at the age of 15 in 2006. He will be canonized on April 27th during the Jubilee of Teenagers. Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, a young man known for his love of mountaineering and charitable outreach to the poor, was born in 1901 to a wealthy family in northern Italy. Frassati died of polio in 1925 at the age of 24. His doctors believed he caught the disease while serving the sick. He will be canonized during the Jubilee of Young People on August 3rd. From urban California to rural West Virginia, these young saints have inspired dozens of ministries. Roselle Regis introduces us to two ministries that, like their namesakes, help young people encounter Christ.
Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati.
What he means to me is kind of like an example of having fun, but also loving God.
And Blessed Carlo Acutis.
He is such an inspiration to the younger generation. I mean, he played Pokemon and everything. You know, he lived a life that's very similar to ours.
The two young soon-to-be saints have become popular patrons for teens and young adults. So it was no surprise that young Catholics around the world are rejoicing after Pope Francis announced that he will elevate Frassati and Acutis to sainthood in 2025. Though they were born 90 years apart and with differing interests, they had one thing in common. Frassati and Acutis lived a life full of faith and devotion to our Lord. In the west coast of the United States, in sunny California, a fellowship pays tribute to Frassati. The Frassati Hiking Club at John Paul the Great Catholic University meets every month to encounter God in the great outdoors, from beaches to mountains.
What we were going through with the hiking club and how we were hiking and praying and things like that, it was all kind of what Pier Giorgio Frassati did. You know, he was kind of like a model.
Timothy Flood, one of the leaders of the Frassati Hiking Club, says he aspires to be just like Frassati, who was an avid mountaineer and dedicated his life to helping the poor. On a photograph of what would be his last climb, Frassati wrote the phrase "Verso l'alto," which means "to the heights." This phrase has become a motto for Catholics like Timothy.
I think one word to explain Pier Giorgio would be mountaineer, you know, and the two versions of that would be like climbing mountains, but also, you know, climbing to the heights, you know, climbing to God through his daily life.
Timothy said being in the Frassati Club has grounded his faith.
I think that's how it's brought me closer to God, to be able to take a step back and to see my life as a whole with, you know, silence and the beauty of nature, mass and fellowship.
Hundreds of miles to the east, in the lush mountains of West Virginia, a summer camp is named after Blessed Carlo Acutis. For kids and teens, they call this place Camp Carlo.
Camp Carlo is part of our diocesan summer camp program. So our diocese has operated a summer camp for 60 years, started in 1965, in the mountains of West Virginia, in a beautiful place called Huttonsville.
Nick Chansey, director of youth and young adult discipleship for the Diocese of Wheeling-Charleston, said in 2020, due to COVID, the camp was closed for the summer. This gave them time to rethink their name, which used to be Camp Tigert and Camp Bosco. They chose to name their camp after Carlo Acutis, who loved video games, soccer, and music, and had a deep desire to foster awareness of the Blessed Sacrament. This tech-savvy, soon-to-be the first millennial saint, created a website detailing Eucharistic miracles throughout the world.
I think it came down to the fact that when we're looking at incredible inspirational figures for our young people, he is truly one of the best.
Along with archery, ziplining, horseback riding, and canoeing, Chansey says kids and teens also participate in Mass, Eucharistic processions, and adoration. They hope campers find love in the Eucharist, just like their namesake. 14-year-old Ashby Mattern, who has been going to Camp Carlo for the past 3 years now, enjoys prayer time.
We pray almost all the time, and I love that. Whenever we do the faith formation, we don't just always go in one area. We're just everywhere.
Previous camper turned camp counselor Joshua Christ says Camp Carlo has changed his life.
I know for myself, adoration has been a really big part to play in my spiritual journey, where I have to, you know, quiet my mind.
Joshua says his biggest takeaway from camp is that he is never alone. Jesus is always there if he needs him. That is why Joshua has a special devotion to Blessed Carlo Acutis.
To me, he is a saint that I can point to and say, it isn't impossible for sainthood. It's easy to look at the saints and be like, wow, they are just so mystical, so amazing, that it just seems so unattainable sometimes. But what did he look to? He looked to God. He looked to the Eucharist. And that's something that we can all do.
Rosal Regis, EWTN News in Depth.
These saints not only inspire awe with their stories, but spend their time in heaven doing good on earth through their prayer. In Los Angeles, diocesan priest Father Juan Gutierrez experienced a miraculous healing thanks to Frassati, and that miracle is the reason Frassati will be canonized. When speaking with EWTN News last December, Father shared the story of his providential healing.
I had already gone by about a month with my injury when I got the MRI. The day after I got the MRI, I started a novena, and 15 days after my MRI, I went to see the surgeon to prepare for surgery, and he checked the images, he checked my angle, and he seemed puzzled after he was checking me, and he told me, you were supposed to have a gap, a hole in your ankle, but I can't find it, and you must have somebody up there looking after you. I just felt chills all over my body because I remember my novena. I remember the day I had a special incident in the chapel at the seminary, which is when we believe the healing happened.
On the East Coast, another young man says his life was also changed forever thanks to Frassati. In 2011, Kevin Becker fell 13 feet off his apartment rooftop, leaving him in a coma with multiple fractions to his skull. Loved ones surrounded him in prayer at the hospital, some praying a novena for Pier Giorgio's intercession. Becker soon came out of his coma and went on to talk about a young man who had appeared to him in his dream during the coma, a young man who introduced himself as Giorgio. Becker now believes it was Pier Giorgio Frassati who appeared to him in his dream and interceded for his healing. Today, he frequently shares his testimony with the group Frassati USA and tells us why Pier Giorgio is a powerful patron for young people.
He's normal. You know, when you look at him, and you learn about him, everything, you know, there's a power of faith in him that not many people even knew, not even his own parents, right? He loved Mary, but he lived a normal life. And I think that gravitates to a lot of practicing Catholics that are, you know, trying to strive for things. And you learn about Giorgio and you go, wow, I can be just like Giorgio. I can do Giorgio things.
Blessed Carlo Acutis and Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati, pray for us. The Jubilee also serves as an opportunity for Catholics to return to the sacraments, particularly confession. A conversation with two missionaries of mercy next. The Jubilee Year's merciful roots date back to the Old Testament, which calls for reconciliation, pardon, and remission of debts. Pope Francis is continuing that emphasis of mercy this year with a special call to return to the sacrament of confession. During his extraordinary Jubilee of Mercy in 2016, Pope Francis created and commissioned the Missionaries of Mercy. These are more than 1,000 priests selected from every continent who are called to be persuasive preachers of God's mercy and to dedicate themselves to hearing confession. In the papal bull for this year's Jubilee, the Holy Father calls on bishops to take advantage of this special ministry. He says, quote, "In this Jubilee year, may no one be deprived of the opportunity to receive God's forgiveness and consolation." You may be familiar now with our next two guests for their frequent contributions to EWTN News, but what you may not know is that they were both commissioned to be Missionaries of Mercy by Pope Francis back in 2016. Father Thomas Petri is a Dominican friar and the president of the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C., and Father John Paul Mary Zeller is a friar with the Franciscan Missionaries of the Eternal Word. He currently serves also as the chaplain for all EWTN employees. Thank you both for being here. I'm really looking forward to this discussion. I would love to hear first how you heard of Missionaries of Mercy and how you became one yourselves. Father Petri, I'll start with you.
Well, of course, the Holy Father issued a bull about the Jubilee Year of Mercy in the fall of 2015 and also then invited priests through the dicastery of the new evangelization to apply to speak to their bishops or to their superiors about this idea of being missionaries of mercy, who he wanted to do, just as you said, not only preach mercy, but also be able to offer the sacrament of confession. And in fact, he gave the Missionaries of Mercy faculties to remit the automatic excommunication that attaches to certain sins that are normally reserved to the Holy Father, to the Holy See.
And you both received that invitation. What was that like, Father?
That was amazing. I think, first of all, in receiving the initial invitation was from my superior. When it first came out, the bull, I think everybody was excited about the extraordinary year Jubilee coming out of mercy. When an invitation came out from the then Pontifical Council, now the Dicastery of the New Evangelization, my superior sent me an email, actually all of our friars an email. Is anybody interested in this? And I'm the only one who answered back. So what I did was I said, Father Anthony, I'm interested. And then he said, why don't you contact Bishop Baker? I contacted Bishop Baker, and really quickly I received a letter from Bishop Baker. I emailed it back to the dicastery, and they actually have a number count on how you were received. So on my bull in my office, it's 0002.
Wow.
So I was a second Missionary of Mercy that was approved by the dicastery, and one of the friars jokes and said, well, who's number one? Well, obviously Jesus is.
Absolutely.
And he's the first Missionary of Mercy.
Amen. And Father, what was that like to receive that invitation?
Well, I think it was an amazing experience. Of course, we've had a number of meetings with the Holy Father as a Missionary of Mercy, and I'll never forget the very first one, which was during Lent, right at near Ash Wednesday in 2016 when we were commissioned. And I think we can all agree that one of the salient points of Pope Francis's pontificate has been this emphasis on mercy. You know, it's not that mercy just became part of the church's teaching, but it certainly has been a real emphasis of his pontificate, forgiveness, bringing people in who have been away because they have felt guilty and shamed. And I will never forget, in that first meeting, he said to the Missionaries of Mercy that he saw us as his ambassadors and representatives. He actually said of his pontificate, he saw the Missionaries of Mercy as the legacy of his pontificate, even back in 2016.
Wow. How has this shaped you? How has this changed your vocation?
Well, you know, the Holy Father, Pope Francis, I think everyone would agree, has been a very surprising pope for a lot of different constituencies in the church. And I think some have even used the word divisive in some ways. He does a lot of things that surprise people. But when the Holy Father, when you're sitting in front of the Holy Father, even if you're in a group of 700, 800 priests, and it was only priests in the room, which was really a wonderful experience to speak priest to priest, and it was clear the Holy Father was speaking to us as a fellow priest, right? When the Holy Father, when the successor of Peter, the vicar of Christ, looks at you and says, you are going to be my representatives and you are the legacy of my pontificate, and I want you to have this special relationship with me, it's regardless of what you might agree with or disagree with or think, it is difficult for that not to be convicting and moving and sort of galvanizing to your own fidelity to the successor of St. Peter. And so I would say that experience has caused me not only to love the office of the man, St. Peter, all the more, and to be grateful to God for the gift of the Petrine ministry, but actually to have a much greater filial devotion to the man, Francis, you know, who now is the reigning successor of St. Peter and the reigning vicar of Christ. And so, therefore, it, I think, has made me a better priest and a more faithful son of the church.
Wow, that's beautiful. You know, here we are, we're talking about the sacrament of confession, and surely there are people who are watching, who are listening, who haven't been to the sacrament in a while, if at all. And maybe there's people who they've had bad experiences because maybe, you know, on the other side of confessional, they didn't receive what they felt like was mercy. Any words of invitation to someone right now who's listening?
The Holy Father actually addressed that in every one of his addresses with us over the years. He's met with us three times since we've been commissioned. And in the first address, he actually used the word lambasted. He said there have been people who have been lambasted in the confessional by priests. And it's hard to imagine because I've had so many good experiences in confession. I've never really had a bad experience in confession. But there have been people that have had really bad experiences in the confessional from a young age. And then they stop going. You hear stories, I mean, people coming even to me. I think when I was commissioned as a missionary of mercy, I went on News Nightly actually that night and talked about it right away. So I've been one of the more visible ones, and people have sought me out because I've been visible on EWTN. And there have been people that have been away for decades, up to 60 plus years. And just inviting them back and just simply saying, you know, Jesus wants you to be forgiven. You know, Pope Francis says that God never tires of mercy, of forgiveness. He never tires of forgiveness, of forgiving. And we as priests, we need to go too. We need to go to confession because we can't be merciful if we are not, you know, penitents ourselves, receiving mercy ourselves. So I would say just to, you know, to not let nothing come in your way between God. And I, you know, I think just as a missionary of mercy, just I beg you for forgiveness. I beg your forgiveness, I would say, in the name of Jesus, through, you know, the mandate given to us by the Pope. I beg your forgiveness for how you were treated in confession. And don't let that be somebody else's mistakes. Don't let that be an obstacle for you receiving the mercy of God.
While I have you both, this question came to my mind. Something I hear from people is, well, why do I need to go to a priest if I can speak to Jesus myself?
Well, there's a very easy answer to that. I mean, on the one hand, it is true. God, you know, the church teaches that God guarantees the sacraments, but he's not bound to them. So people can be forgiven outside of the sacraments, especially in extraordinary situations. I mean, God is the one who forgives. But the key word there is the guarantee. Right? Yes, you can speak to God on your pillow before going to bed and do an examination of conscience and confess your sins, but you never truly know. You never truly know. And this is the gift of the sacraments, is that they're guaranteed by Jesus Christ. And so when you go to the sacrament of confession and you hear those words, I absolve you from your sins, you can walk out fully knowing that you have been forgiven and made right with God. And not only that, not only have you been healed and made right with God, you've been restored to grace and even given more grace and more gifts to actually be more and more configured to Jesus Christ.
Wow.
It's the guarantee plus the extra gifts of the sacrament that you need.
Well, I know I feel a stirring in my heart right now. I thank you both for truly living out this mission of mercy and for being these ambassadors. Father Petrie, Father John Paul, thank you.
You're welcome,
thank
you, Catherine.
And there's no better place to end than with that call to mercy. While our special preview of the Jubilee might be over this week, EWTN will continue to cover the Jubilee all year long. EWTN's extensive coverage includes the Jubilee of Adolescents and Youth in April, when Blessed Carlo Acutis will be canonized. In May and in June, we'll bring you live to the Jubilee of Families, Grandparents, and the Elderly. And in July and August, catch Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati's canonization during our broadcast of the Jubilee for Young People. For more information on our Jubilee coverage and for more resources on becoming a pilgrim of hope, go to EWTN.com/Jubilee. That does it for this special edition of EWTN News in Depth. I'm Catherine Hadro. And that does it for me for the next few months as I take my maternity leave. Please know your prayers for my daughter's delivery are greatly cherished. And you'll all be in good hands here as other members of our team take over the anchor chair while I'm gone. For that, be sure to join us again same time next week for more news important to your Catholic life. Happy New Year, and God bless.